Tonight, James wears a tank top, Mike has his hair in a ponytail, and Richard Hammond is still not on the show. And this is Couch Potato Mike pissing off, trying to piss off a fly with a laser pointer.
This is a super weird episode. We'll get back to that. Okay, so I did that review on the SkyTech laser pointer, and it has that super bright mode. Not enough to, like, burn holes and shit, but still, on the brightest mode, it's pretty fucking bright. I discovered when you turn it on the brightest mode and point it at flies, it pisses them off. Which is great, because, you know, you spend your whole life, like, flies buzzing around you, pissing you off, annoying you. Now you can get some fucking revenge. And Jordan's like, God damn it, Dad, that's my laser. Stop pointing at the flies, that's my laser. Jordan the cat. You are jealous. You're jealous. We'll play the laser later. So like I was saying, this is a super weird episode. Because we're recording on a Friday, and Mike is here. And we didn't do an episode this week, which is why it's coming out on Friday, because I'm going to try to record this and then put it up today.
Yep. What he said.
Yeah. So,
we're doing a different format today.
Oh, yeah. So, instead of the normal, you know, news stories, survival punk, nutrition punk, etc., we're going to do listener calls and questions.
But before we get into that, I would just like to say this. I've been having to test my blood sugar a lot recently.
Oh yeah,
I've now been prescribed to test it twice a day, and my blood sugar was testing right around 400. I had 399 at
You never told me that.
Yeah, I got to 399 one night.
Oh, that was the night after you ate the two Totino's pizzas?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were skyrocketed to 399. But after that night, and my doctor told me that I might, if I can't get this shit under control, that I'm going to have to start taking a Lantus shot in the stomach or wherever the hell they give it to you.
And Mike does not like shots.
No, I don't. So, I accidentally threw myself into a diet. It's a weird, somehow, amalgamation between Atkins and Paleo. But I'm proud to say that my blood sugar's gone from 399 down to 82.
Which is pretty badass.
Yep. And I haven't even been tempted to cheat on the diet. I looked it up, though, to see how many carbs a day a diabetic like me should be allowed. And they said no more than 60 a meal. I've been eating considerably less.
I was going to say.
That. 40 to 60 carbs a meal is allowable for somebody in my situation.
I was going to say, that's...
I'm averaging...
Depending on where you got that information from, I was like, there could be a huge variable. Like, if you get that from the Diabetics Association, which I think are fucking idiots, because if they did their job right, we wouldn't have a diabetics epidemic. But fuck you guys. If you got it from, like, some people in the paleo or, like, low-carb world, or people that have gotten rid of their diabetes... I was like, I bet the number will be lower. But when you said no more than 60 grams per meal?
40 to 60 grams per meal. I eat...
So like what, 300 a day?
Well, if you have 60 grams per meal and you eat three meals, it's 180 grams carbs. Now, I've been eating about 40 to 60 grams a day.
I can... get behind that.
That's just a rough estimate, too, because I'm trying to avoid carbs when at all possible. I mean, I am, like I said, it's a weird combination of Atkins and Paleo. I'm low-carbing, but I'm still eating certain Atkins-friendly things. Like, here's a good kicker I'd like to
do. Why isn't it just straight Atkins in? What's making it Paleo?
I don't know. I eat a lot of steak. But anyway.
It's just Atkins.
The fucking shit, so I'm pretty much, without studying the Atkins diet or anything, just everything I've known... and found out about Atkins and low carbing and shit over the past few years just all surfaced to the top, and I'm like having zero problems with this diet.
Yeah.
I have decided to give myself one cheat meal a week. Not a whole cheat day, though, because those scare me. What's this? This is the Dr. Atkins New Diet Revolution. Can't be too new, but still.
No, yeah. I looked over there. I have several books on... I have lots of books on diet and exercise. But, yeah, I have one that's, 500 low-carb recipes? It's garbage.
Oh, and my last weigh-in at my doctor's office, I'm back up to 300.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm hoping this will also help me lose some weight.
Yeah, because I think Yep Dimitri beat you. Like, I think he's like 2 something. Like, he was above 300, and I believe he's below the 300 mark now. Or yeah. He was.
Well, my lowest weight in recent years was when I got it down to 260. I mean, I lost 45 pounds in 12 weeks.
For your contest.
Yeah.
That I coach you, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was extreme low carbing.
You were doing a lot of things.
You know what? Occasionally, I will allow myself something. Like the other day, last Saturday, I gave myself the Kit Kat.
Yeah.
Or the other day at work, I allowed myself to eat one donut. Where normally I'd eat one, I'd take one, and then I'd, you know, try to palm another one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, there was a bunch of donuts left that gave them to me. And I drove 54 miles home with these donuts.
Yeah.
And didn't eat them.
Was that a couple weeks ago when I went to Serenity's for the, when we went to the Ren Fair, I bought a fresh dozen Krispy Kreme donuts. And I ate one and then drove like another 200 miles.
Damn.
And that one fresh out the deep fryer,
uh-huh.
That was melting your mouth.
Oh,
good.
My God, those are heaven.
Yeah.
I love those. It's weird. I've been missing weird things.
Like what?
I was craving ramen noodles so hard yesterday.
Me, I have a recipe for paleo ramen, and so does our former guest, Jeff Nimoy.
I am very dubious about ingredient replacement recipes at this stage, because they just make me miss the original.
True. I like simple food that does not like... Some people are like, oh, I gotta have my paleo bread or my low-carb keto bread or this and that. And I'm like, oh, I just don't ever...
And I think that was a big part of my problem the first time I tried to go on the paleo diet. I'm like, what would be a paleo substitution for this that would work? Because I'm still trying to have the old meals, and I realized, you know, just fucking go... Just go primal with it. Just go raw. I mean, not raw, but... You know, just go old school. Break it down to its fucking bare ingredients, components, and start with minimalistic. And
I think Rob Wolf pretty much nailed it best when... So one of the things you could do is if you write down a list of, like, random things you can have. Yeah. So, like, you can have, say, you can have some ground beef.
Yeah.
So you have, like, a meat category... And or, you know, like, if you guys listening are, like, super, super feeling frisky, you can make, like, a dartboard. Like, get a cork board, like what we have for the board for the show that we're not using this episode. And then on that, like, write, like, so you have a category for, like, meat. You have a category for veggies. You have a category for, like, spices. And you have a category for herbs. And then you just pick one or two things from each category. So... You got grass-fed beef, and then for your veggie, say you've got, today we got Brussels sprouts. So we got some beef, some Brussels sprouts, we got some cumin, salt and pepper don't count, you put them on everything, and a fresh herb, let's say cilantro. Bam, 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 that's your meal. And there's like, I want to say it was like, of the approved foods you can have, like... It's 20,000 different possibilities. If you just randomly pick this, is that.
You know what? I've become opportunistic about it.
Yeah?
Like, at the moment, what would be convenient for me to eat? Yeah, I'm kind of like a scavenger now, but it's fucking working for me, so yay.
Yeah.
Me.
I like to be prepared, because I know, like, for me, if I'm not prepared, then that's when, like, I start to go off. It's like, if I get hungry and I don't have food... Then my mind's like, Fuck it, motherfucker, you need some potato chips. This is what you need, this, that, that.
But here's the weird thing for me, dude. I've had another diet, an involuntary diet, slip into my diet because of my weirdness. I call it the homeless diet. If I can't easily find food that fits my needs, I just won't eat. Like the other morning, I went to Wally World looking for the hard-boiled eggs in the deli section. They didn't have any.
I remember. I saw
that. I'm like,
that.
I'm short on time. And I'm like, fuck it. I can't think of anything else right now. Fuck it. I just won't eat today. I ended up eating, but not because I went out and bought something. One of my coworkers bought me like a breakfast sandwich from a gas station. She bought them for all everybody in our department. And so I just took it apart and ate what I could from it.
Yeah.
Threw away the English muffin it was on.
Right.
Which is a damn shame, because I love a good English muffin.
Yeah, so going into a fast that long is good, but for me, it gets tricky. It's like once your brain starts to get, like, hungry, your thinking part of the brain shuts down, and the Labrador brain turns on. It's like, food, 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 food! And then you're fucked.
Yeah, but I still won't let myself eat unless I know it's approved for my diet. Or at least 95% approved for my diet.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, if there's a... I look at every fucking food package now. I really do. It's become an instinct. I just scan the fucking, like, percentages, go straight for the carbs and sugars.
It wasn't in that article that we read, but one of the changes coming to food label packaging that wasn't just the added sugars, they're going to remove percentage of daily value, which I think is wrong usually. I think the government percentage is wrong, and they're going to have actual numbers of micronutrients.
Hmm.
Like, if it has, like, magnesium, this has 10 grams of magnesium, not, like, 4% of your daily value. I like having the actual numbers. That wasn't a Q&A. That was a Mike's update on his diet.
I am kind of interested, though.
In what?
In how many calories a day my intake is right now, because I have no idea.
You can get an app and track them.
Hmm.
There's a MyFitnessPal. You can get it on your phone or your iPod. And it lets you look up your food items and add them to your daily food thing. And it tracks all your macronutrients, micronutrients, tracks everything. Calorie intake.
Hmm.
Which I'm not, you know, you've heard me talk about how I don't think the calorie is a good method as much as, like, macronutrient content. Because, I mean, to say that the human body is nothing more than a furnace that burns calories indiscriminately is naive at best and ignorant at worst.
You got to think of your body kind of like the inner constructs of a car. I mean, yes, you have the engine and the motor and the transmission and all that stuff. But guess what? You can't just pour one oil into it and it's just going to burn it all equally. Different things go in different places and therefore affect the car in different ways.
Exactly.
Just like different things go into your body and it affects different parts of your body in different ways. Your body processes it. So thing this way, this thing that way.
I'm actually kind of hoping that they expand the macronutrients to include, so right now, there's three macronutrients.
Mm-hmm.
Protein, carbs, and fat. I kind of want them to add ketones as a fourth macronutrient, because it is.
They won't listen to you. Well, but speaking of ketones, I have started doing the tablespoon of coconut oil each night before bed.
How long did you start that?
3 days. Tonight will be my third night.
And this morning was your best
ever. 82. It was. I mean, this is the first time I've tested under 100.
I had a feeling the coconut oil would push you there.
Yeah, it's sitting in my room. The coconut oil is. I'm not keeping it refrigerated or anything.
You don't need to.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's staying partially liquid.
That's nice.
So it's easy for me to just scoop it in there, and it gets down quicker that way.
Yeah.
Still chunky stuff. I mean, it's not a good texture, and you know me in textures, but fuck it.
Yeah. Look at that tub of coconut oil I bought today.
The white one?
Yeah.
Damn.
It's a big one. Yeah. So one more thing before we wrap up this, because this episode will go long, because with all these Q&As. You, me, your wife and Serenity tested our blood sugar last Saturday on cheat day at nighttime after we've cheated the entire... Well, you didn't cheat. You had one or two things that were bad. So not even a cheat day, but a cheat snack, a meal, like a cheat meal. So nothing. And then...
My blood sugar tested at 160.
Right. I had eaten horrible that day. Just like I woke up at like 4 in the morning and started eating junk food.
Well, no, let's not put the cart before the horse. So I tested mine first 160. And then Serenity wanted to test hers, and it was like...
120 something.
It was like 125-ish, okay?
Yeah. I was thinking 124. So
my wife tested hers, and it was like in the high 130s.
Yeah.
And then you tested yours after eating horribly. Arguably, you ate worse than all of us.
Yeah, exactly. No, I definitely ate worse than all of you.
And your blood sugar was 71.
Yes. Serenity was like, well, you eat immaculate every other day of the week. I actually want to look into it because that just seems odd. But anyway, let's get into...
Your body produces stuff in the right way to fucking keep everything in check.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Anyway, we got questions. So I sort of arranged the... Well, no, I didn't. The two questions up front may go the longest. I arranged the top two ones. And then from there, they may be semi-rapid fire. So the first one comes from listener Ryan. And this is on supplementing wild edibles. So she wants to go camping and then forage for some of her food and then incorporate that into some of the food she's brought. I gave her a couple of the ideas that I had via Facebook Messenger. She messaged me, and I told her I'd answer on the show. And she followed up to say that she didn't just want, like... I'm like, oh, and you can, like, you know, forage for a salad. She's like, well, what else besides salad?
Grubs?
You could, actually.
If you're near water, fish.
Yeah, so things to supplement it. There are a lot of greens you can saute. And so before you go out in the woods and just start grabbing stuff and making it, make sure you have a good book and or guide and know what you're doing. Because it could kill you. It could kill you. If you guys haven't seen that show, Forge and Fire. So one of the things I said was you can make bannock ahead of time and then you can add pine needles to it. There's a lot of you can add a lot of things to bannock, like whatever wild berries you have, pine needles, the ash of some kind of tree actually makes a good bannock, and I can't remember, probably don't use oak ash, maybe, because oak ash is what they make lye out of, so kind of iffy on that one, and don't do a poisonous tree, but maybe it's pine ash. I don't know. I know you can use pine needles. So, and the basic recipe for bannock, because Ryan, Ryan, I keep wanting to call you Rain, because your name is spelled R-Y-A-N-E. Like the video game character Blood Rain, you remember? Yeah. Survival Rain. No, you're Ryan. I had to look all over for a good recipe. A couple years ago, I tried to do a coconut paleo bannock. It was a disaster.
Well, World's Best Lemonade looks promising for a good recipe.
I may read some of these. No. So you can make pine needle tea. You just sort of... You don't want your water to be quite to a boil. You want it to be like... Just under a boil and then let it sit for a few seconds. There's no way... I mean, you're going to take a fucking food thermometer out to the woods where you go camping and check for exact temperature. No, just keep it under a boil. And then cut the pine needles up into quarter inch little pieces. Just dice them up. It doesn't have to be fine, but you just want them diced up a little bit. And then throw them in the water, let them infuse for
3 or 4 days.
5 to 10 minutes. You were close. 5 to 10 minutes. And then They'll settle at the bottom so you can drink it without
throwing up.
If you don't knock it back, you won't suck down pine needles. Or you can strain it off like if you used your bandana or something. And that's that. So, and the bannock recipe. So bannock is just one of those things, like the pioneers used it. A lot of bushcrafters use bannock because it stores relatively well. Mm-hmm. It's like It's like a take and bake in the woods bread. It's like an easy bread that you take and then when you go camping and then you can eat it. This is not paleo, but I don't believe Ryan is paleo, and a lot of you guys and ladies aren't. So what you need, and I've seen Ron Hood's wife make this, like ahead of time, like a couple of days, and then you can take it camping and just put it in like one of those big, like 1 gallon Ziploc bags.
Right.
So you need 2.5 cups of flour. Don't use all wheat flour because it doesn't mix well. If you're going to use wheat flour, you're going to want to mix it like, you know, half wheat flour, half like white flour. 2 tablespoons of baking powder, 1/2 tablespoon of sugar, 1/2 teaspoon. Did I say tablespoon? That's a teaspoon. Half teaspoon of sugar, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 3 tablespoons of oil, 1 cup of water. She used 3 tablespoons of margarine because she said it gave the best consistency.
And 5 gallons of Jack Daniel's.
Yeah, you can use, if you use butter, make sure you use salted butter. If you use unsalted butter, it very well will go rancid and you'll have rancid bannock.
And you wouldn't like bannock when he's rancid.
You would not. This is one of the times where you want to use you could use coconut oil, but I don't know how well that works. So you might want to try that at home before you take out the woods and rely on it. I don't suggest eating margarine, but she did, and that's what she said works the best.
Ew.
Yeah.
You know what hillbillies say. Margarine is only 1 molecule away from being plastic.
It is. It's disgusting. And then 1 cup of water, which you add when you're there at the campsite. And then, you can cook it on a rock or in a skillet, next to the fire. What?
Nothing. I was filling dead air.
Oh, so yeah. And then you can take all that, and then you can incorporate your wild edibles into it. So you put your pine needles into it, and that actually cooks and gives it a good flavor from what I hear. I don't mind the pine flavor. I actually like, 'cause the pine needle tea, I like that. It's not like drinking pine salt. Like, it's a good piney flavor.
And it also depends where you're camping.
Yeah.
Like what part of the country, what's your terrain?
Exactly. All wild animals. Like, if you happen to be camping in season and your area happens to have, like, any sort of wild berry, throw that in there. And then you have extra things in your bannock.
Yeah, and as always, it's good to have guide general information about the area, what wild edibles are in that area, stuff to look for.
Yeah.
And stuff to avoid.
Yeah. The pine tree itself is a huge resource for wild edibles. I believe I've said before the pine tree has 7 things that are edible. It has the pine sap, which is basically syrup. If it's hardened, sometimes it'll like harden on a scab. That's kind of, you can use that like a lozenge or a candy, like, and suck on it because it's sweet and it'll sort of dissolve slowly. You could get the inner cambium and make pine bark bacon like me and Mike did before.
Yes.
Which is tasty. Surprisingly, like...
My daughter ate that on purpose.
Your daughter ate that on purpose. You ate it, and you hate everything, basically.
That was good.
It was, yeah.
It was awesome that you could fucking fry up pine cambium.
Yeah. And it becomes crispy. And there's... So, finding crispy things naturally is really hard.
Yeah, crispy things naturally that are edible is even harder.
Yeah, I mean, like, people on low-carb diets are often like, what can I eat that's crunchy? Because, like, you can't make a lot of things crunchy.
That crunch, the crunching sensation sends endorphins to your brain.
Yeah, and pine cambium has it when you fry it. Like I said, the pine needles are edible in several ways. The young shoots...
How are the pine needles edible, besides just brewing them into tea?
You could not, like I said, when you cook them in the bannock, you could eat them that way.
Oh, okay.
You can, they don't really have the best, like, texture, and they don't really break down that well. Like, you can chew on them, and then spit them out. You could swallow them, but it'd be like corn, I think. You'd poop them out straight. So.
Gotcha.
I wouldn't bother with, like I said, the cambium, if it's the right time, you can get pine nuts from the pine cones.
Yep, they have to be young enough.
Yeah, they have to be young enough, and it has to be the right time. So there's that. So if you want to make a profitable side business, you can wait for the pine pollen to drop, and pine pollen is damn near bioidentical to testosterone. So, I mean, just saying.
Are you fucking kidding me?
It's weird, yes, but you can get, like, crazy, like, man hyped up off of pine pollen.
Oh, wow.
Interesting, yeah. And you can sell it on Amazon.
Pine trees exude testosterone.
Yeah. Weirdly enough. Soy has an estrogen compound in it, which makes is why sense. I don't suggest you male listeners take any soy products.
Yeah, leave the silk at the fucking store.
Stop getting me, kitty. He didn't get me. So stay away from soy if you're a man. So more things to do. Cattails. You can make a lot of things with cattails. The tubers on cattails can be roasted sort of like a potato-ish. It won't really taste that good.
Interesting side note. When potatoes were first introduced over in England to the Queen...
That was poison because
they didn't know they didn't know how the hell the cooks didn't know how the hell to prepare them, so they threw away the tuber and cooked the greens.
Ugh.
And damn near killed everybody.
Yeah, because the potato is a relative of deadly nightshade. It's in the same family of the nightshade family.
Yeah, so in other words, stay away from potato greens.
Yeah,
they can fuck you up. They were banned in England for 60 years after that.
Avoid wild carrots if you come across them, because pretty much every wild carrot is poisonous, unless you know better, unless you happen to be like, oh, this particular carrot, not deadly.
And unless you're an expert, and I do mean fucking book-studied expert on fucking mushrooms.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take the risks, because some are delicious and some are completely poisonous.
Yeah.
If you see a morel, those are fucking unmistakable as a morel.
Unless you... There's a false morel.
There is a false morel?
There is a false morel. And if... Ron Hood got poisoned because he was like... He wasn't paying attention. He was like, oh, yeah. And, yeah.
It looks a lot like a morel, but it's poisonous?
Yeah.
Like, there's certain fucking big mushrooms that'll grow on the sides of, like, tree trunks and shit like that that are called saddle mushrooms or something like that. Now, I know fucking Dave Canterbury, he identified those in an episode of Dual Survival.
Mm-hmm.
He said those were awesome.
Oh.
And then he fucking brought them back to camp where Cody hid the protein he provided to the soup that they were making with the mushrooms was, like, a bunch of worms. He's like, Dave, go ahead and eat your soup. That ain't my soup. It's got worms in it.
Oh, yeah.
This was the same episode where he had set a fucking snare to hopefully catch a rabbit or something like that. Caught a skunk.
Yeah.
I love that fucking episode. I've never seen Cody Lundy laugh so hard.
God, poor Cody.
He walks up, sees a skunk, just laughs his ass off. He's like, all right, I think what we should do is like, oh, what's this wee stuff?
Yeah, this is you.
So what's your strategy for getting it out of there? Well, my strategy was a two-man strategy, damn it.
Yeah. So, you can eat insects, Ryan. Like Mike said earlier, grubs are fairly easy to find.
But just like wild edibles and mushrooms, you have to know which ones you can and which ones you can't.
It's not as hard with insects. Like, I would stay away from centipede. I'd stay away from anything with those extra legs, because millipedes are poisonous, right? One of them.
Millipedes and centipedes can both be poisonous.
Just don't eat them. And then don't eat any insect that's red.
Right. Bright colors, you always want to keep careful of it. Here's a tip I picked up from Les Stroud. If it's just lumbering along the ground like it hasn't got a fucking care in the world, don't eat it.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that know that anything that tries to eat them will die.
Yeah. Grubs you can eat. You can saute them in the skillet, and they will burst. And you can eat them. Unfortunately, we don't live in South America where they have a grub beetle whose flavor tastes like bacon.
Oh, you gotta be
the bacon grub.
That's fucked up.
I would eat bacon grub all day.
You see it in a movie with a big old box of bacon grub.
Yes, as Mike's daughter knows, you can eat crickets.
she's never going to forgive you for that, dude.
Nope. Grasshoppers can be eaten. You're talking about supplementing things. If you bring a batter, you can batter and cook your grasshoppers And they taste like chicken wings. Because I battered and deep fried a cricket before. Or no, a grasshopper, and it was delicious.
And you can forget kind of what it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. Except for mine still looked like a creepy grasshopper. But it tasted like a chicken wing. It was delicious.
Oh, that's nuts.
Yeah. You can barbecue roast all those big bugs.
Mm-hmm. I mean, most bugs that look flaky like that, like grasshoppers and shit,
yeah,
are usually relatively edible. I mean, grasshoppers and locusts and cicadas are all relatively close.
Yeah.
Especially the locusts. Locusts just look like giant grasshoppers. I mean, so, and there's countries that where locusts are like their big source of protein.
Yeah. If you're just doing something like bringing a Mountain House meal, you can just add in pretty much anything to fill it out, to make it more. So if you find singing nettles in your area, you know, make sure you de-sting them, and you can put those in there, wilt them, and to bulk up more tummy area.
Also know how to catch and kill snakes. Snakes are good eating.
Listener, who is it, Lisa? No, yes, Lisa? Yeah, she was just like, ah, snakes, ah, gross.
Oh my god.
Oh, I want to eat snakes so bad.
I loved it on that fucking episode of Man, Woman, Wild where they caught the snake. They killed the snake. They chopped the head off. They skinned the damn thing. They were cooking it, and the muscles were still writhing.
Yeah.
And it was like an hour later.
Yeah.
Because Ruth was like, we are cooking this, and it's still moving.
Yeah. Yeah. If I find a snake, I'm going to kill it and put it on my new grill I got. So I think we've about covered your question. If there's something more you want, send that in and we'll more. But I mean, basically, find what's in your area, get familiar with it, and then find out how to cook it and then supplement with it. Most everything I've done is just like you either eat it raw or you just sort of saute it with a bunch of other stuff and then eat it.
Yeah.
You can put in, you know, some cattail and some nettle and some plantain and some grubs and then make a good meal there. There you go. Next up is a call. You guys will hear the call.
All right,
we will not hear the call.
Caller, you're on line two.
Hey, Mike and James. This is Matt from Oklahoma. And my question is how to stay cool during the summer without AC. I mean, you could always stay cool by listening to Survival Punks. But, you know, I think you know what I mean. I'm going to shut up now before I make an even bigger fool of myself. Thank you. Bye.
And that was our buddy Matt again. Matt was... Not you, Jorn. You can't call in. Matt was wanting to know about staying cool in the summer. I assume he meant in the house or in an off-grid type situation.
Stay inside and buy an air conditioner, jackass. All right, what's the next question?
So, not quite. There's a couple things you can do to, like, say you have limited power or your air conditioner went out or...
Wait, limited power? You mean like Cypher from the X-Men where he could just learn languages quick?
No, like say you can't, like, you can't just throw an air conditioner at it. Like, so we're talking about ways you can stay cool without the air conditioner. Like, say you're on backup power and there's only, like, you can't run an air conditioner on solar. But you have to build a pretty good solar system.
Move to Canada. Next question.
No. So if you can prevent the sun from heating your house, then your house will stay cooler.
And you'll have to get the daughter to do it. Next question.
No, stop that. So there's a couple ways you can do this. If you fucking buy a shade cloth and manage to like cover your house with it, you'll reduce the amount of sun hitting your house, and it'll stay cooler. You'll stop heating up that. So, or you can put like a lattice. Yeah, put lattice and, like, grow some vines through it in front of your house on your south-facing wall to avoid the sun hitting it like that. I've heard of, or I had a book, both. I've heard of and have a book where someone took a sprinkler system, ran it on top of his roof, and then set it to, like, go off and burst, like, every 15 seconds or something.
Okay.
So, like, the sprinkler would, like, burst, and it would drop water droplets all over the roof of his house that prevented the roof from ever getting hot. And it was in such small amounts that it wasn't, like, it was cheaper in water bill to do that than it was to, like, run air conditioning for the entire house.
Wow.
And it just lowered the temperature of the entire house without that, you know, because obviously if you're walking out somewhere and the sun's beating on you and you go underneath the shade of a tree, instantly you feel like, what, 10, 20 degrees better?
Yeah, depending on the tree.
Depending on the tree, yeah. Remember last year, year before, when we were hiking down there and we stepped in that grove and it was like so much cooler.
I mean, it was a noticeable 10 degrees difference.
Easy, yeah. So anytime you can keep the sun from hitting your house and warming it, that's good. I do different colored curtains. So during the summertime, I actually need to turn them around. I use white curtains on the outside so it won't. And, you know, during the summertime,
it'll reflect
the heat away. If you want to go a step further, you can get like cardboard or styrofoam. Cover it in aluminum foil, the shiny side, because aluminum foil has a shiny side and a dull side.
Yeah.
Cover it with the aluminum foil, shiny side out, made to fit your windows, and then put it there, and it reflects even, like, none of the sun's heat will make it past that.
Damn.
You won't get any sunlight in, but you won't get any heat in.
That's pretty cool.
It just bounces it all back.
So are people cooking their heads when they use those things at the beach? You'll see somebody out sunning, and they'll have one of those things that they're holding it up like this.
Oh, yeah, they're bouncing more sunlight at their face.
God.
I don't understand that at all, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't get that. I mean, it seems like your face would get more sun than any other part of your body regularly, so why get the extra?
Yeah, I mean, the opposite is true. Like, if during the wintertime, your south-facing thing, if you put down a reflective barrier or, like, a pond on your hit ground, so when sunlight hits it, it reflects it back up, you'll get double the sun, and you'll heat your house up more. Sort of reverse psychology here. If you plant trees around your place, the shade will fall onto your house, keeping it cool. Window fans. I'm a big fan of the window fans, and keeping the air circulating, so get the hot air out, get the cool air in. One day this week, somehow my window fan got turned off, and, like, I woke up sweating for the first time. I was like, I think Mike pulled a prank on me, you faggot. Yeah. I didn't notice it before I went to bed, but it makes a big difference in keeping the house cool.
It was only about an hour before you had to wake up. Then I turned that on. Let's see if he notices.
Yeah, I woke up sweating.
Want to make him think he's going crazy.
So yeah, if you can run some window fans and then surround yourself by fans. If you've got a little bit extra power, and Matt, if you've got some extra money and want to sleep in real comfort, I think for like $250, $500, there's this device called a chill pad or a chili pad. It's a mat that you put on your bed that hooks up to a machine that circulates water and cools the water down to certain temperatures that you choose to suck the heat away from you. It's like a radiator. If I could afford this, dude, it's like sleeping on like comfort.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I was like, and that, like, it follows my philosophy of not heating and cooling the entire area, but just yourself. Because if you've ever, like, sat on the cold ground and just felt this heat suck out of you, you know what I'm talking about. Like, it's the best way to suck the heat out of you. What else? Cold water? Water will suck the heat away from you? Anything?
Oh, yeah.
Conduction to get the heat away from you, And water, even if it's room temperature, will still suck the heat out of you.
I recommend sleeping in the bathtub.
I don't, but you can get a chili pad. There are non-mechanical versions of the chili pad, sort of, and pillows. I have a Japanese buckwheat whole pillow. Buckwheat. It doesn't. It stays cool to the touch always. Like, it doesn't ever, like, you know, normal pillows, your head lays on them, it gets hot.
Right.
This doesn't. They have even better versions of this. Like, pillows that will actively, through, like, not through power, but other means, will stay cool. There are non, like, mechanical, electrical pads that do the same thing that will just actively cool you.
Mm-hmm.
You can fucking take your sheets and fold them up and put them in your freezer and put them out when you're going to bed.
Oh, that's
it. It won't last forever, but it'll keep you cool for a little bit.
I would imagine.
I
have a weird problem. If I have a fan blowing on me all night, I'll wake up with a headache.
I had it. I don't. I woke up with an earache one time because the fan was blowing in the ear, and I just turned my head.
I'll fucking wake up and it'll be hurting right here.
Weird.
I'm going to have to put pressure on it for it to go away.
Weird. I don't know. I guess I can see that. Like, an air conditioner blowing on my forehead will give me a headache.
Oh, yeah. I've woken up with migraines because of an air conditioner. Back when my bed was positioned right next to the head sleep. So, I mean, where my head lays down was 6 inches from the air conditioner. And I woke up with a migraine so hard one time that I literally could not go to work.
Yeah. I
cannot drive around all day. Oh. Fucking no.
You can build a ghetto air conditioner. And I did that last year. And it worked. I mean, if I had done it a little bit better, it would have worked better. So if you get a 5-gallon bucket and you look on Amazon and get a styrofoam cooler built to go inside of a 5-gallon bucket, and then you put the lid on, and then you put the other lid on, and then you cut holes in them, put a fan on top of it, and then mount it like you can glue it, or I just duct taped it. You punch 3 holes in the front of it and put in PVC pipe, 1.5-inch mm-hmm. PVC pipe, until it goes into the center. Not the center. You want it to go in past the styrofoam.
Right.
And only stick out, like, you know, like an inch or two. Like, you don't need to be super long.
That's what she said.
Yeah, oh, yeah, she did. You fill it with ice. You put the lid on. The lid that now has a fan on it. You plug it up. You turn it on. It actually blows out really cold air.
Until your ice melts.
With the 5-gallon bucket by itself, the ice lasted 3 or 4 hours, ish. With a styrofoam cooler, it will last much longer. And if you've got like a deep freeze or something, you can just put the bucket in there and refreeze it and then start over again.
Hells yeah, bitch!
But yeah, I mean, for a low cost, I mean, you can run that off of like the tiniest solar panel ever.
Yep.
So there's that. I use this thing when I'm sleeping to cover my eyes. It's
he wears his sunglasses.
It's like a gator pad or something. If you get them wet, they stay cold for hours.
A gator pad?
It's something like that. I got it from Home Depot. No, Lowe's. I got it from Lowe's last year. They sell different, like these cloths that you get them wet and they stay cool for hours and hours. Yeah, so it's neat. That works. I haven't had to use the water part of it this year because I have air conditioner and fans are better. But last year without it, it was pretty tough. There's varying thoughts on sleeping nude or not sleeping nude to stay cool. I get hot in a couple of clothes, so it's whatever your personal preference is. Some people say if you wear pajamas, much like people in the desert living areas wear like all those big baggy clothes, it helps keep them cool.
Yeah, the wind gets under them.
Yes. So yeah, not. I don't believe that, and surround myself by fans.
That's just what a teacher told me once.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It even works when they're on the inside of your lamp.
Oh yeah, those flies hate the lamp or hate the laser.
I love lamp.
I think that's all I have on staying cool. Hell, you can put your underwear in the freezer. Cool down your nads.
I don't want to cool down my nads.
I do.
I want to cool them down. Really, I don't want to stick them to frozen underwear.
I don't know. My balls get really hot. And on that bombshell.
It is time to end.
It's time to go through the rapid fire questions. Okay. We got a bunch of rapid fire questions. We're going to go through them.
We're going to attempt to rapid
in like 15 minutes ish. I would love to know yours and Mike's EDC. EDC is everyday carry, things we carry every day. Mine's not super fancy at the moment. I carry a lighter on my keychain, a P38 can opener, and I carry a knife. I carry a Kershaw something. No, Spyderco. I carry a Spyderco something knife. Defender? Defiance? It's a good size knife. I usually have a box cutter on me, too, most days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really I mean, I change it out occasionally. Sometimes I used to have a spork on my key. Like, I used to have my keychain thing super tricked out, but now it's just sort of the bare minimums and the pocket knife, and that's... wallet. Oh, in my wallet, I've got like one of those multi-tool things, you know, like a screwdriver and screwdriver and different hex nut openers and bottle opener. And, I've got silver coins in my wallet. So, but, Mike, what do you carry every day? Your accoutrement?
From one to three knives and from one to two lighters.
Yeah. And you've got a pocket watch that's part of your EDC.
Oh, yeah, I do. I have a pocket watch that I carry with me every day.
So
yeah, not a wristwatch, a pocket watch.
Yeah, I've got a smartwatch on the way from China, which will have sort of different features and cool stuff. Oh, my cell phone. My cell phone, yeah.
I also carry a hair rubber band.
Yeah.
It can come in handy.
It can. I used to always carry rubber bands and paper clips on me because they both have like infinite uses.
Mm-hmm. Oh God, yeah. It's in my hair now.
Yeah.
But, yeah. No, I used that the other day to make a smartphone folder so I could use the GPS without having to hold the damn thing the whole time.
There you go.
It helps that my car's ghetto has got all sorts of nooks and crannies that shouldn't be there.
Oh yeah, Your car, yeah.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate that. Ripping out the fucking dashboard.
Bastard. It changes a lot, and, because sometimes I have things to test, and I swap things out, but at the moment, that's what's working for me. What is your ideal apocalyptic scenario? Not. I mean...
Ideal apocalyptic scenario?
Yeah, that's like saying... What is your ideal way of getting fucked in the ass? Not.
I would say a zombie apocalypse full of retarded zombies that accidentally keep killing themselves, and you just get to watch and laugh.
I mean, just to go out there randomly, damn near tribulation. Like, if a bunch of people were just gone, no apocalypse, no nasty rotting dead bodies. If like. 87.5% of the population just disappeared. I'd probably be okay with that.
You're okay with 12.5%?
What?
12.5%.
Yeah, what's 12.5% of 8 billion or whatever we're at now?
Let me see. Okay, half of 8 billion is 4 billion. That would be 50%. Down to 25% would be 2 billion. So down to 1 billion people.
Yeah, I'm okay with 1 billion people. I think that's what the population was like in the 16th century.
Hmm.
Yeah. So,
did you ever see that one episode of Sliders where they ended up in this world?
The lottery?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The population of the planet was 500,000, and they kept it that way on purpose.
Yeah.
So there would always be resources.
Yeah.
I mean, they had fucking like honor cars that you could just drive around and leave places.
It's...
And playing the lottery, you go up to a fucking... lottery machine and say how many times you want to play, and it just gives you money.
Yeah.
It's like you say, $5,000, and $5,000 will come out, no questions asked. But each one of those is an entry into the lottery where your family's...
When you die.
Yeah, your family's taken care of for the rest of their lives, but you have to die to keep the population low.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah, the one dude, he didn't use it. The fat dude.
He knew better.
He got $2 from it. But Crying Man got like $2,000.
And what was that girl's name? Wade.
Yeah.
Wade won it, too.
She's the one that won, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he went with her, but he didn't win, and he fell in love with another chick that was one of the winners.
Yeah, and she turned to me. Yeah, I remember that episode. Why do you prep?
To stay alive. Next question.
Yeah, I prep for more practical reasons. It's cheaper. It's better. Nothing I do to prep can hurt me and can only help me.
Unless you prep too much and end up with a collier's house and then all caves in on you.
Yeah, but I don't, though. I prep because it's practical. I know that there problems could happen. I started learning about prepping, and it just everything made sense. I was like, oh, this just makes sense. Yeah, I'll do this. It's just a transfer device for my phones.
Ah.
Mike was looking at something I got. What is your ideal survival firearm?
The one we saw earlier.
Yeah, that thing was awesome. It fucking it shoots for you. You like pin your target and hold the trigger, and then when it matches, bam, it shoots. Unless you're shooting a drone, and then it won't hit it. I am probably the 22 long rifle. I think the 22 long rifle is my ideal survival firearm. I would like to have like 4 or 5, but if you're like James, the apocalypse happens, you're going to have 1 firearm. What would it be? The 22. Bullets are fairly well. They come in big boxes. I still don't think they're that easy to find, but I stockpiled I don't know like 2,000 rounds, so it's cheaper ish usually. You could probably take a deer with a 22, but you're getting iffy. If not the 22 long rifle, I'd go with a 12-gauge shotgun with adapter shells. Like, you could have slugs, and then you can have different shots. So, either or. I'm going to go with a 22 or a 12-gauge.
Those are both very good choices.
Yes. Michael, on top of your head, what would you pick for a survival firearm?
I would have to pick a World War II era German Luger filled full of bullets made from the melted out blade of an angel.
Well, there you go. Is that a Supernatural?
Yeah, Crowley made it. He melted down an angel blade and made bullets for it that would fit in an old German Luger from like World War II, a Nazi pistol.
I must have missed that episode.
And he shot an angel with
badass.
I love Crowley. He's like my favorite character on the show after Dean.
Yeah, I love Dean. Is technology a help or a hindrance for survival? Both. Both.
Yes.
Relying on technology without acquiring knowledge, bad. Supplementing your knowledge with technology, good. So, I mean, GPS is awesome. Knowing how to read a map, more awesomer-ish. So
take an orienting course.
Yeah. So I
learn how to use a compass.
Yeah. Learn and supplement. So use your technology for that.
It's always great to have a technological backup, but don't make it the thing that you're fucked without it.
Exactly.
All right. Next question.
What are your bug out bag must haves?
A bag.
A big knife. I'm a fan of a big knife, like a big survival knife. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a big knife in mind.
Yeah, it's just
comes with sharpeners and files that are also double as like whistles.
Yeah, and I also like a saw. So I think I have folding saws, but I actually really like the pocket chainsaws better. Not those little flimsy, like, the ones that, like, Lestrade used that were, like, on, like, key rings that broke. Yeah. Like, you and me tested it, and we did video for, like, the pocket chainsaw I have that has the big straps. It's, like, chainsaw blade.
Oh, yeah.
We just tore through a tree with it.
Well,
that's
on one of those shows, the one that was set up in
the
Alaska.
The Alaska thing, yeah.
Yeah. This one was actually more of a competition, though. This one old guy, he had a fucking, he called it his chainsaw in a can. It was like a fucking,
yeah,
like a dip can or whatever, but had the chainsaw blade in it with the two rings on the ends.
Yeah.
And he lets, like, his arch nemesis on the show fucking use the damn thing. They're like, they're both from Alaska, they're old mountain men and whatever, they're their biggest rivals. But they're having to work together. He's like, and dude's trying to fucking use it. He's got his fingers through those damn key rings. He's trying to saw with it. And dude walks up, he's like, here, take these big 10-penny nails. Because he had nails that were like this fucking long. And just put it through there, and now you got yourself some handles. And he's like, yeah, I don't think, I'm fine. And he keeps sawing like this. And he's tearing his fingers up. And he finally, puts the fucking things. God, I hate it when he's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something with handles.
The ones that I have actually have, like, big, like, leather straps. Like,
that's awesome.
Your whole palms go through them, and you tested it. We tested it. Mm-hmm. It works really well.
Paracord.
Paracord, yeah.
Cordage. I mean, the good thing about paracord is you can cut paracord with paracord.
I do like that. And it's really easy. Like, you just friction it, it just breaks right through it.
I mean, in a matter of seconds.
Metal water container. I like metal water containers because you can boil and purify water it that way.
Yep.
Those are, I mean, we have episodes on bug out bags where we talk about this stuff.
Some kind of a first aid kit is a must have for me.
And I actually knew there was a first aid kit question on here. That's why I didn't even say anything.
Oh,
about
okay.
It. Yep. So definitely must have big knife.
I also like putting MREs in mine.
Yeah, I do different stuff. Please describe the differences and similarities of bug-out bags, get-home, car emergency kits, everyday carry.
Everyday carry is something you carry on you every day, usually in your pockets.
Yeah, and you have to, like, it can't be like, oh, this will be my everyday carry. Like, it's actually what you do carry every day. Like, that is, like, some people are like, well, this is my EDC, and they never carry it, so it doesn't fucking count.
That's not an everyday carry.
Yeah.
Now, bug-out bags, everybody knows this. Bug-out bags are also known as 72-hour bags.
Yes.
It's basically enough to survive for 3 days with nothing but the contents of your bag.
Yeah.
And great way to have all your handy little survival tools in one place.
Yeah.
Now,
I would say that's
something a lot of people would keep in their car, their office, or whatever, in case the shit hits the fan and you're away from home. Just enough to get you home, usually a day's worth of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you can keep your bug-out bag in your car or by your door. It's sort of your preference.
It's basically a smaller version of a bug-out bag.
Yeah, designed to get you from being out to back home.
Yeah, basically, it's a bug-in bag.
Car emergency kit. You can add additional stuff, and I talk about this in some of my winter articles that I've written. So in your trunk, in addition to your little get-home bag, you can have extra stuff. Like, you can have – I used to carry a case of water in my car.
Yeah.
There's plenty of room in the car. Just carry a case of water in it.
Also, it's a great idea to keep stuff for the car in these things.
Yeah.
Like, I have a full fucking toolkit in my thing. It came with a ratchet strap, LED flashlight. Plus, I've added a bunch of other tools to it. I mean, you've got to keep your car going, especially if you're trying desperately to get home. And, as you know, abandon your car as a last resort.
Yeah.
Because it's shelter. It's protection in the right situation. It can be used as a weapon.
Yeah.
A lethal one.
Depending on your vehicle, carrying extra fuel, probably a good idea. Having like an emergency, like 2 gallons of gas, probably a good idea.
Like, I keep a gas can in my car.
Yeah, I keep a gas can. I keep a military jerry can they use for kerosene, but, I mean, guessing the worst case scenario, I can put gas in it.
I also like to keep a small jump pack and a small air compressor.
I have a jump pack and flashlights and a little bit of spare fluids and stuff.
Having shitty cars, I can't tell you how many times that jump pack's came in handy.
Yeah.
Especially on my car with the wiring's all fucked up. Once again, thanks, Ray.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. I gave him a good car that had a dead battery, and he gave me back that hunk of shit.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Extra food, snacks and stuff. Depending on the season. So if you're going to keep extra food in your car, like, you know, Laura bars or Clif bars or something like that, in the summer, it's going to have a fairly short shelf life here in the South, where our cars get super hot.
Oh, God. My car at my lunchtime is like getting into a damn oven.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be 10 degrees hotter in the car.
Yeah. So you got to keep that in mind. In the wintertime, watery stuff might freeze, especially if you're in the North. So, and there's nothing to add to water to make it not freeze that's human safe.
No.
Yeah.
There's so, antifreeze.
Which will kill you.
But it tastes delicious.
Exactly. What was that beepy sound? So those are the differences. EDC emergency car kit, get home bag. Yep. There's overlap between all of them. I noticed, Matt, that you're a noob, and you forgot the all-important, what is it? What is it? The inch bag, the I'm never coming back bag, which is meant to have like everything. Like you put cast iron in it. Like it's basically this is I'm gonna go out in the woods, become a pioneer, and build a homestead.
Oh my god!
So it's just all that plus bigger. By the way, for the get home bag, I've gone to using a Ribs front pack. I just like because it's a backpack that where you're able to get all your stuff that you'd have like in a get home bag. Accessible up front. Instead of, like, having to take off your pack and dig through it, like, everything's up front.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like that. And before that, I had a sling pack, and the sling pack, like, I just didn't like that sort of... I didn't like it.
Right.
With the Ribs front pack, like, it looks kind of odd. Like, it looks like you're wearing a vest. If you have a jacket on over it, you really can't even tell you have anything, though.
Ugh.
That's it. So... What would you personally do in a mass shooting scenario? I would try to get me and my friends and family the hell out of there. I mean, if I thought I could successfully stop the shooter with... I don't know.
Stay low. Don't be a hero. Try not to draw attention to yourself and get the fuck out of there, if at all possible.
That's... Yeah. Yeah, that's... So...
Because in a mass shooting situation, you're dealing with a psychopath who's come in there prepared to kill any and everything that moves.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't want to encourage anyone to be a hero. I want you to get out as safely as possible.
Yeah.
And that's why whenever I go anywhere... Always make sure you know where your exits are. I like to, so if I'm in a restaurant, I like to get the chair facing the entrance so I can see who's coming in and who's going out and always be aware of my emergency exits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't get trampled. Be aware of your exits and just try to get out as quick as possible. Be safe. I mean, yeah.
Now, one tip I'd like to give people who are trying to escape a room that is very, very crowded, like, say, mass shooting in a theater, everybody's running for the fucking exits, okay? Don't get trampled. Okay, there's good ways to avoid getting trampled. If you're trying to come in and there's, like, the sea of humanity streaming out the door, don't just try to immediately merge into it. Treat it like a fucking highway. Notice how people don't deliberately crowd and bump into each other on the interstate? Try it like that.
Yeah.
Just think of ways to merge in without, you know, like, hurting yourself or anybody or getting stepped on by 1,000 very panicked feet.
And look around. A lot of times, if there are multiple exits, people will always pick one. And they'll see the other people going towards that exit, and then they'll just follow them. And the other exit will be perfectly clear, and you can just go towards it. I've seen this happen a million times. Like, if you're leaving a theater or something, everyone will go towards one exit, and the other one... We'll be clear. There won't be anyone there. So pick the path of least resistance.
And, you know, the vast majority of places are required to point out all emergency exits.
Yeah.
So keep in mind, in a situation like that, use the emergency exits. They're there for that reason.
And by all means, if you're armed, protect yourself.
Oh, speaking of emergency exits, this is a true story. This one fucking idiot, I can't remember his damn name right offhand, but he was getting his ticket, and they asked him, He's like, the row that you're on, your seat, is next to the emergency exit. Are you okay with that? He's like,
yep.
Well, do I get a discount or something like that? They're like, we can give you some extra free drinks. He's like, oh, yeah, that's right. Liquor me up and put me in for charge of the emergency exit.
Wow. I remember going to see the third Batman movie after that Batman shooting in Aurora, Colorado.
Yeah.
And I may or may not have concealed carried my firearm in the theater that may or may not have been no firearms allowed. Just saying.
He might or he might not have done that.
Yeah, and you might or might not want to also do that. And if you find places that don't allow you to carry your firearm, maybe you find other places to go to.
Oh, yeah, and never dare someone to shoot you. They will. This isn't TV.
Yeah, no.
Next question.
Next session. What are your first aid kit must-haves? I tend to focus my first aid kits around a couple philosophies, actually. The big one is things that stop bleeding.
Yes.
That's my, like,
Band-aids, bandages, gauze,
gauze pad. Yeah, blood, like, lots of blood-stopping stuff. Not real, like, lots of pad stuff, but not real big in the, like, Celox and Quick Clot and all that stuff. I have some of it. Price-wise, though, you can buy a lot of, like, pads and blood-stopping stuff. For really cheap.
Oh, yeah.
Carex rolls, I got a couple of them. That's like most, like, gotta have stuff to stop blood. And then besides that, I've got sort of like a plethora of pills. Just because that's like, so that's the stuff you're gonna break into there and get a lot. Like, you know, like you're out with friends, like, oh, I got a fucking headache. Well, I got aspirin and I got acetaminophen, and I've got Tylenol, and I've got, you name it.
Acetaminophen,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
is Tylenol.
Yeah. I've got acetylsalicylic acid. I've got some of that, too. That's aspirin.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I remember that from The Tick, because they used acetylsalicylic acid to take out Dinosaur Bob, or whatever his name was.
They killed him with aspirin?
They turned him back into a human.
With aspirin?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah. You know, you just have all that in there. It's a lot of that stuff is the stuff that you use a lot, like fucking stomach acid stuff. Like, that's the stuff you're going to break into there a lot for. So that's, for me, those are must-haves. Like, I got to have blood stopping, and I got to have, like, the drug cabinet in there. Besides that, you know, you have your normal stuff, Band-Aids, and I went to a medical supply house that sold to the public, and I have a couple of things, not must haves, but I have things like special bandages that won't stick to burns because they're covered in a body human safe oil, basically.
That's a good thing to have.
Burn cream, you know, so I kind of nerded out, but blood stopping and headache medicine. Mike, what are your must-haves in your first aid kits?
Well, blood stopping stuff, like you said. A lot of that's already in there.
Yeah.
I like to have stuff for disinfecting.
Yeah.
I like to keep a little bottle of iodine in there.
Mm, good.
I've actually got the tools to perform minor surgeries in my bug-out bag.
Yeah.
I have scalpels and forceps and fucking stuff to sew people up
with
and shit.
I've got stitches stuff, but I have, and I prefer the strips to close wounds.
Mm-hmm.
The butterfly strips.
Right.
Just because they don't require any knowledge, and you can't really fuck those up.
Oh, my God. You know they actually have adhesive zippers for to close people's wounds to hold them longer before they can get to surgery?
I have to add those. I like that idea.
Yeah, you basically, it's a zipper that adheses to the body on both sides. You just get the zipper teeth up right to where the wound is, and then once you've got everything adhesed, all you got to do is zip, and it closes the wound temporarily.
I'll be damned. I like that.
Super glue is also a good thing for for minor cuts and stuff like that. Believe it or not, that was actually one of its original purposes.
I keep that in there.
It was basically liquid sealant for small cuts.
nitrile gloves, I like them to protect you if you're treating other people. I actually want to do an episode about medical prep.
You know what? If you just come across something and it's really cheap or free or whatever, and it seems to have a medical use, just grab it.
In my good medical kit, this is maybe not so much a must-have, but if you have the must-haves covered and you're trying to look for the next level thing, pick up a cheap decompression needle. For, you know, if the grid is down or whatever and there's, like, shooting stuff, or you just happen to be, you know, like, you have been a survivor of a mass shooting thing and someone happens to start having, like, tension pneumothorax, you can decompress them and move on.
Absolutely.
And it's one of those things, like, I guess you could do it with... It's just better to have a decompression needle. Instead of trying to finagle and, like, think of a way to decompress someone without it, just have one. They're, like... a couple bucks. So technically you can use one of the large bore needles. Like if you pick up one from work, you can keep that. That'll decompress someone. Just to throw it out there.
A
weird little thing, like you can get those so that where they in like a store where they have like the pest deterrent stuff.
Yeah.
Like the fly strips that you can. Mm-hmm. So they also have fly window strips.
Right.
They're like clear plastic that you stick on your window that's like double sticky. So it sticks on it and it's sticking outside. They land on it, they stick.
Right.
You can use that to like as a chest seal. Holy someone gets shit. A bullet wound, you stick that fly thing, you know, hopefully they don't have too much chest hair, but you can get a good seal on someone that way and keep, you know, their lung air from leaking out.
Good God.
So that may or may not be a must have, but, you know, they're fairly cheap, might as well add them. Yep. Moving on. These are kind of rapid fire. What hand tools do you recommend everyone should have for a grid down scenario?
Lube. Next question.
Shovels. Shovels, pickaxes, saws. Hammers, saws, buck saws.
Buck 50 saws.
Pliers. God, pliers.
Oh, God, yeah.
A variety of pliers. But God, pliers.
Wrenches, needle nose, everything you could think of.
Yeah, wire cutters.
Tin snips.
Tin snips, yes. Sharpening instruments. Sharpening stones, like sharpening things.
Files.
Yeah.
Machetes.
Yeah. A sling blade. I clean up a lot of, like, weeds and shit with the sling blade that I have. Mm. Super useful.
And he ain't killed nobody yet. Mm-hmm.
Not yet. Mm-hmm. But I do like mustard on my biscuits.
Is biscuits and mustard?
Yeah, Carl like biscuits and mustard.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I like biscuits and mustard.
Yeah, I've never done that.
Yeah, I have because I saw that. And I like mustard, so it actually turned out pretty good. Soldering iron, maybe. Or you can just make one with your lighter. Ghetto as shit.
Oh my God.
That was funny, yeah.
It was still cool, though.
Yeah. You can go further down the rabbit hole, but definitely those ones we mentioned.
What are some effective DIY home security preps, both low and high tech?
So, they make various, like cell phone type alarms. They make one now, I think for like $20. It connects through your Wi-Fi to your phone, and like you can look at your front door, basically.
Yeah.
That's neat. You can do that. Low tech, plant like rose bushes and thorn bushes around your windows and your perimeter.
Mm-hmm. I would recommend like motion sensor lights.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
I
tell you one thing, they now have like video baby monitoring systems.
Yeah.
That you can actually hook up multiple cameras to where you can see the babies in here and you hear everything and you can see everything and they even come with night vision.
Yeah.
Some of those play strategically, you know, looking out windows and stuff and down hallways. I mean, it's a low-tech solution. They are a little bit pricey, though, and I don't like that. There's much cheaper ways to do that.
Communication. So, like, I keep wanting to get some walkie-talkies for here so me and Mike can communicate back and forth, like, if there's a security-type issue.
Oh, God, we'd be horrible with those.
We would be, but yeah.
James, come in. Over. Yeah, Mike. Ass butt. Over.
Digging a poop. Yeah.
What are you doing?
Pooping.
What are you wearing?
They make a, like, sort of a tinty cling thing you can put on your windows that basically makes them shatterproof.
Oh, wow.
Like, you can't bust in your window. That's neat. Just simple reinforce, like take the screws out of your door that hold in the receptacle where your door knob goes in.
Uh-huh.
Usually those screws are, like, a fraction of an inch. Replace them with, like, two-inch long nail or screws that go into your 2x4 studs.
Hmm.
Because, you know, with that tiny, like, screw in there, you can just easily knock it out.
I still want to bust up a spark plug and throw it at a car window.
Yeah, that's...
I really want to do that.
That was a good show. You can there's a couple things you can do, like, for under $100, you can reinforce your door frame to make it completely non-breakable in. Like, there's one that's, I want to say it's like $100 or something, like, it's just like this metal frame that you put inside your doorway that doesn't take up any extra room, you screw it in, and I saw, like, the police team try to break in the door with that battering ram, and they couldn't do it!
Damn.
Yeah, so,
it's funny, you know, I've actually seen, because I used to have a delivery job, I've seen people that would actually have the big fucking, like, 2x4 barring the door.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, to have the fucking big...
Like the old castle thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's relatively cheap to do.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot of good... I mean, that's some good reinforcement. It was fucking funny to walk in and see that dude.
That
like
looks
that.
Ghetto, but yeah, it's effective.
And plus, they sell those cheap little fucking doorknob, like, fucking kickstands.
Yeah.
Where it has the two forks that go up under the doorknob, and then it has the rubber stopper that goes down to the floor.
Yeah.
Also, if you're a fan of the Home Alone movies, putting a hot iron on one of the doorknobs will cause anybody who touches it to get an M branded into their palm.
Yeah, or hook up a shotgun behind your door that pulls on a string and blows people away.
Or, you know, like some kind of a flamethrower that takes their hair off.
Hells yeah. I think that covers that mostly. Is there going to be an episode this week? Yes.
Bones.
There we go. Thanks for all the questions. If you have more, send them in.
Absolutely, yeah. And we'll do another one of these episodes at some point.
When we collect more questions.
And on that bombshell, it's time to end. So for the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike explaining it all.
This is James Sickwin Burnett.
DIY to survive, yous bitches.
DIY to make meth, yous guys.
Meth. Don't be Breaking Bad.